Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer who served in the Middle East. He will analyze the hopeful changes underway as the Arab Spring has the Assad regime in Syria teetering and the Revolutionary Guards regime in Iran alarmed by events in Syria and increasingly paranoid about their own restive population. However, all hopes for change could be dashed if, as senior Israeli intelligence officers warn, the Netanyahu government will likely attack Iran, leaving the compliant and supine superpower, the United States, on the wrong side of history. Then Roger Morris continues the conversation about hopeful change amid the death rattle of empire. He served on the senior staff of the National Security Council and has just completed a history of U.S.-Afghan relations and covert activity in South Asia, Between the Graves. He will also discuss the assassination of Karzai's brother Wali, the governor of Kandahar, who was monumentally corrupt and widely despised. May he rest in peace. Then finally, we will speak about the real state of the American economy overshadowed by political gamesmanship between one party that apparently will be rewarded for wrecking the economy and the other that will be punished at the polls for the resulting wreckage. David Ruscio, professor of economics at Notre Dame University, will sort through this train wreck and assess how fast the United States is becoming a plantation economy. I am now joined by Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He is the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
Ian, it's great to be here.
And events in Syria, as I mentioned in the opening, it does seem that the Arab Spring has the Syrian Assad clan, the Alawite regime there, teetering. It seems like the United States played a very helpful role, in as much as the U.S. ambassador and the French ambassador went to Hama and joined the demonstrations, which I think prevented the Syrian government from murdering thousands of their citizens in a demonstration that had about 100,000 people in the streets. Then, of course, the Syrian thugs attacked the U.S. embassy and the French embassy, orchestrated and egged on by Syrian state TV, leading the Secretary of State not to cut ties with Syria, but to say that the Assad had lost all legitimacy. I take it that the U.S. doesn't want to play into the regime's hands by meddling. That's probably why they haven't cut bait, because obviously the regime is blaming everything on Israel and the United States.
Well, I served in Syria, and it was a pillar of American foreign policy that we didn't like the regime. We never did like it, didn't trust it. But the alternatives were so awful that we were going to support it, at least not undermine it. The CIA never had any sort of covert action against the Syrian regime. It stayed away from the Syrian opposition. So for Hillary Clinton to come out now and say that the regime has lost its legitimacy is an enormous change for the whole region. That doesn't mean the Alawites are going to fall or there's going to be a coup d'etat. We just don't know that. But we've really, in this, crossed the Rubicon because we do not know what's going to follow the Alawites. They're a small percentage. They control the country through the military and the security services. The other Muslims in the country, the Sunni Muslims, don't consider them legitimate Muslims. They believe in the Trinity and all these very odd things. And they are at the opposite end of the spectrum of Osama bin Laden. Now, the Syrians are saying that the Muslim Brotherhood will take over and you will have an Islamic Republic there. Washington clearly does not buy this line.
Well, in your latest book, The Company We Keep, that you wrote with your wife, Dana, you talk about how you had a clandestine meeting with a Syrian general. And it seems to me that that would be the indication of the end of the Assad regime, is when the army cracks. And clearly, army officers and enlisted men have a terrible choice between killing their fellow citizens and fellow Syrians or being shot in the back of the head by the security people. So you've got the Bashir's younger brother Maher running the security forces, but most of the Syrian army, I understand, is locked down in their barracks, and they're only using Bashar's thugs.
They're using the Alawites. I mean, that's always been the case, that the elite divisions and the security services with real power are Alawites. There's no division in Syria that can move out of barracks without the permission of an Alawite officer. So if you have a colonel in command of a regiment, you will have an Alawite second command actually controlling it. Now, how that army will break up into pieces, I can't tell you, but it would clearly be along sectarian lines. The Sunnis, which represent about 65% of the country, would simply desert from the military, and leaving these elite units to fight, and it would be a civil war.
Well, of course, that the portent of a civil war and what happened next door in Iraq, thanks to George W. Bush's regime, is the glue that's holding the Syrian regime together, and that's why people are not joining. The entire population is not joining the protests.
You're absolutely right. It's a mirror image. We're going to get a civil war if the country cracks up. And just like Iraq, no one I saw in writing or ever has predicted the way that would break up, the way it did. And it's clearly broken up into sectarian divisions. And the same thing will happen in Syria. And the chances of it not spilling across the border into Lebanon are remote. It's another country that has these sectarian divisions. And it's so odd for most people for most Americans, it's very difficult to get their mind around the way the Middle East is made up, these kind of primeval divisions.
Again, let me remind the audience, I'm speaking with veteran CIA officer Robert Baer, who the movie Syriana was based on him, the character that George Clooney played, and written a number of books about the Middle East. We're talking in a broader context, though. I just did a UCLA Hemmer Forum the other night with two of the organizers of the Egyptian Revolution in Tahrir Square, and they said with absolute confidence that the Arab Spring will bring about the end of the Syrian regime, all of those corrupt regimes in the Middle East and in the Gulf, and eventually the Saudi regime as well. So, do you accept that notion of the march of history?
I certainly hear that from smart people in the Middle East that live there and know it and can think their way through problems. They are all saying that none of these regimes will be around by 2013 or 2014. What they have to go up against, of course, is the military in Syria, the military that controls the street. Egypt is the same way. Even Saudi Arabia, the National Guard, is the Praetorian Guard in that country, which keeps the royal family in power. And likewise, even Iraq, it's the military that's holding it. In as much as the country's being held together, it's the military that's holding it together. And, of course, we have Iran. It is the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which controls the street. So what we're going to have to see before these changes come about is the crack up of the military. You're going to have to see officers defect, units defect, and then we'll know it really is the end. But until then, it's going to be difficult to predict.
But clearly, the United States should be on the right side of history, and we have had ambivalence towards some of these. Or in the case of Tunisia and Egypt, we were a little late to act. And in the case of Bahrain, we took the Saudi side against the people. My understanding, and this is one of the reasons I called you, is that I've been following statements from the former head of Mossad in Israel, Maya Dagan, along with the former head of military intelligence, General Ashkenazi, and the former head of Shin Bet, the internal security FBI equivalent in Israel, all of whom have gone on the record in the Israeli press warning the Israeli people that Netanyahu, who's getting paranoid and isolated, is likely to attack Iran and do so soon.
Well, I don't think this is a bluff. As much as I know about Israel, this is not the way it works when a regime bluffs. forcing the Iranians to doing something, saying there's going to be an attack. I think that what this tells us with near certainty is that Netanyahu is planning an attack. And as much as I can guess when it's going to be, probably be in September before a vote on a Palestinian state. And he's also hoping to draw the United States into the conflict. And in fact, there's a warning order inside the Pentagon to prepare for a conflict with Iran. It's not saying we're going to initiate hostilities, but it could deteriorate to the point an Israeli attack, let's say the scenario would go on Natanz, a couple other nuclear facilities, to degrade their capabilities. The Iranians will strike back where they can, and that would be in Basra, Baghdad. We have diminished troop presence there. We're already seeing the special forces are starting to look at Iranian targets in Iraq and across the border, which we would strike back. And what we're facing here is an escalation, not a planned out-and-out war.
Well, the new Secretary of Defense has just been in Iraq, and he has warned about the extent to which Iran is already pouring arms across the border. And obviously, the U.S. is vulnerable both in Iran, in Iraq, and in Afghanistan, and not to mention Hezbollah, which is an Iranian surrogate.
Absolutely. And the Iranians are paranoid, as you said, and they're worried about, you know, what the reaction, what's happening to their country economically and in terms of oil and in the oil embargo and other sanctions. And so what we're going to see is there's going to be a proclivity on their part to respond with force. And it's a nightmare scenario because we simply don't have enough troops in the Middle East or enough soldiers to fight a war like that. And I think this, we're really truly looking into the abyss. The good news is that we look into the abyss, but rarely do we go over the edge.
Well, but
there's not much hope, I know.
But Robert Baer, the thing that's just astounding about this is that just as there's some hopeful change underway in that region, in a way that could bring about a whole new era. And of course, to some extent, I think we've underestimated, in a kind of racist way, the Arab desire. As you hear in these demonstrations from the young people leading the Arab Spring, they talk about dignity, dignity, dignity. We've been caught by surprise, but everything that's hopeful would be dashed. And Netanyahu would turn back the clock, and that's why I can't understand why the United States, and particularly the military, aren't already weighing in and warning and saying to the President Obama, for God's sake, you've got to stop this.
The military is. The military rarely encourages wars. I mean, the problem with the military is once they're in them, they have to say we can win them, and they have to say we're winning. But the military is certainly aware of the Iranian problem and what we would face in a conflict. But the president is up for election next year. You've got Israel, which is truly out of control when it comes to doing something about Iran. They just interpret it as an existential problem, and they have to react now, or else. They think the Iranians are going to go right up to tighten the last screw on a nuclear warhead, and should there be some sort of other conflict the Israelis couldn't control, the Iranians are crazy enough to use a bomb. Now, that's their interpretation, or at least inside the Likud it is. And they also feel that if they give up on Palestine, the 67 borders, they will also suffer a huge defeat. I mean, if they go back to the 67 borders, at the narrowest point, it's only 10 miles across Israel, and they say those borders are not defensible.
As you know, and you worked with these people, Maya Dagan and Tzipi Livni and the former...
Well, Ashkenazi, the chief of staff. I mean, Keep in mind, these are all people who understand Iran and know it very well.
Right, but they're going on the record. I mean, we don't read this in our press, which is an absolute disgrace. But there's a vigorous debate going on in Israel where these senior officers are going into the press and being censored by army intelligence, army censors, trying to tell the Israeli people that their prime minister is crazy.
It'd be the same thing if it happened here. I don't know why we're not paying attention. If the generals all resigned en masse and said that our president was crazy, I would pay attention. But I've certainly paid attention to Israel, and I think if I were forced to bet, I'd say we're going to have some sort of conflict in the next couple months, unless this is just a masterful bluff. And I can't believe the Iranians would succumb to it, but I think the chances of it being a bluff are remote.
Yeah, but then why would the Iranians succumb to it, Bob? Because they will benefit from it, for God's sake. This is an illegitimate regime, paranoid about its own people, on the wrong side of history. I mean, this is a gift.
No, you're exactly right. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps needs an external enemy because we've left Iraq. It's no longer the United States that's the enemy, so it's become Israel. But in order to make this threat believable, they would love an attack on their nuclear facilities. And they would love to go to war in Bahrain and Saudi Arabia and Iraq and hit us where they could, simply because their defense is asymmetrical. I mean, we could take out all of their armored units, and it's of little difference to them, or their surface-to-air military sites. It's of little difference. Because they would be able to use, you know, what we call terrorism, or, you know, these irregular forces, which they are very good at, by the way. They would do serious damage to our fleet in the Gulf.
So I'm just puzzled here, just in the last couple of minutes, Robert Baer, about the President of the United States presumably is getting these kind of briefings. I mean, he must be told about what the former head of Mossad and the chief of staff in Israel are warning their public about. What you think he's basically helpless because of this next year being a political year, and he'd just have to go along with it and join the war? I mean, I presume what would happen is the United States would be forced to join this insanity on Israel's side.
We would be forced to do it, and I think the real question is what happens when you see, you know, 100 F-16s approaching Iraq, and there's a call to the White House and saying, you know, we're going in. You know, we're at war with Iran. What does the President of the United States do? And we have little influence over Bibi Netanyahu or the military. It just, you know, we can't stop them. And they know it. And what they're hoping is that the Iranians will react against us because we are the ones that are closest and that they can get to. You know, this isn't a multiple choice question where there's one right answer on what to do about this.
Well, I'm sure many people in the audience and our listeners are thinking that we're blowing smoke here. But again, we're citing people that are at the top tiers of Israel's intelligence and military establishment. And
Ian, we've seen this. You know, Cheney was thinking about going into Syria in 2003 and 2004, just continuing right from Baghdad. I mean, and there was serious talk in the Bush administration of attacking Iran. I mean, they talked about this. So, I mean, this is reality.
Right. And then just in closing, then, I just wanted to refer to the breaking story of the assassination of Karzai's brother, Ahmad Wali, in Kandahar. Do you think that's going to affect, could it get any worse in Afghanistan?
To say we're winning in Kandahar, that we've got the situation in hand, that there's great progress, I think that this assassination just belies that completely. I mean, he was the man holding it together, as corrupt as he was. He was a warlord, and he held the place together, and he was our ally, and now he's gone, and I'm not sure who replaces him, and no one else is either. It's a setback.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Robert Baer.
Thanks.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Baer, who's a veteran CIS operations officer who served in Iraq and Lebanon, among other places. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, dealing with the new Iranian superpower. And his latest book with his wife Dana is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the assassination of Karzai's brother with Roger Morris.
سمعت هالشباب يما الحرية عالباب يما طلعوا يهتفوا له شافوا البواريد يما قالوا اخوتنا هن ومش رح يضربونا سمعت هالشباب يما الحرية